Excellent show today as Dalton Del Don joins the program to run through the biggest questions we have about pass catchers heading into training camp. What's the plan for Dalton Kincaid in year two? Is there a late round breakout tight end that you are overlooking? Will some of these second year receivers with off the field problems have their availabilities impacted in training camp and into the season? All that and more coming up. Let's get into it. It's Thursday, July 18th. I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Football Show. It is a hell of a day to talk ball. And joining me to do just that is the man himself, Dalton Del Don. What's going on, buddy?
Not much, Harmon. It's been a while. It's back to full-time football season now. So let's do this, man. It's been too long since we potted.
Yes, it has been too long. And yes, it is football season. How is this happening? How is this real? Training camps are pretty much opening. Like right now, rookies are reporting. Veterans are going to start reporting for certain teams. It's here. It's back. Football's back for, you know, we're going to say this like the 100th time or whatever. But basically, the next 2 weeks of the pod, we're just going to kind of use these shows as a viewer's guide as to what you should be watching, what you should be looking for over the next few weeks as training camps really get ramped up here. Little just public service announcement. Don't get sucked in to whatever overhyped training camp videos you see right now. Like, it's rough. The aggregators are going to be out there. They're going to be like, look at this route on air. I definitely fell victim to the Calvin Ridley stuff last year. I like Calvin Ridley more before training camp, Dalton. It wasn't just that. But I'm sure I said some dumb stuff on this show about like, oh, look at his route versus Zay Jones' route. Didn't really make a difference. So that's coming to your Twitter timeline. Be prepared and look the other way and focus on the things that actually matter. So today we are going to go over some burning questions that we have that need to be answered in training camp for the pass catchers. Dalton, we're going to go tight ends. Then we're going to go wide receivers. We've kind of put this list together collectively, but you did a lot of the heavy lifting on these and you've had some great questions. So I'm excited to break this down with you today. Let's touch on tight ends first. Before we sink our teeth into the wide receiver discussion after the break. First one here, what's the plan for Dalton Kincaid's year two usage? I think we all agree Kincaid had a really good rookie season, Dalton. He had caught 82% of his targets. He was ninth among all tight ends in targets overall. But some of the like under the hood stats, what I wrote in the piece, they're kind of middling, right? Like if you look at guys that had 75 plus targets, Kincaid was around the bottom of the pack. Or bottom or middle of the pack in yards per route run, 1.59, and first downs per route run. He wasn't like a featured receiver, right? Is he going to be the featured receiver this year? I think for this Bills pass catching core to come together, and again, we'll talk about the receivers later on the show, Dalton. I think Dalton Kincaid needs to have a monster season, but a lot of that comes back to deployment for me, which again, we can talk about here.
Yeah, great job adding him to the outline, a glaring omission by me. Kincaid's so interesting. In five games without Dawson Knox last year, averaged 7.5 targets, a 20% target share, was the tight end 6 in fantasy. In 11 games with Knox, dropped to 4.9 targets, 14.9 target share, the tight end 18. But now Diggs is gone. Kincaid had a 29% target per route run rate without Diggs last season. Diggs and Davis accounted for 80% of their end zone targets last year. Kincaid scored 19 touchdowns in college compared to 5 to Sam Laporta. I know usage was at play there, but there's clear upside with so many vacated targets in Buffalo. Kincaid had the 10th most receiving yards ever by a rookie tight end quietly last year. But as you point out, he wasn't elite under the hood. The low first downs per route run really is kind of a scary mark because that's a good future indicator. So I settled him tight end 5 right behind my guy Kittle, behind the clear. It's kind of a clear tier one, really, with McBride, Laporta, Kelsey, and Mandrews, just because he gets so much action in the red zone. So that's where I've settled. But I could see someone talking to Kincaid into being as high as number one or below Kittle and Pitts. I don't feel super strongly here. He has a wide range of outcomes and certainly a great spot, though, with Buffalo opening up so many targets.
Yeah, you mentioned the name Dawson Knox. I do think that's a critical thing to talk about. Again, going back to that group of 75 plus target tight ends, Kincaid's 60.6% slot route rate, according to PFF, was the highest. Because he was mostly like a slot receiver. He wasn't really an inline tight end. But he was used more like that when Dawson Knox was out. But again, when Knox comes back in week 14 through the AFC championship, AFC divisional round, Kincaid averaged a 57% snap share. Like, those two things are related. So I struggle with Kincaid just in terms of, like, I think he's fine where he's going in fantasy, but can he be a 120 target player? Can he reach that top three tight end upside? I think that's really interesting when we consider that he was mostly used as a slot receiver as a rookie, not an inline tight end. They have a guy that they like as more the inline tight end in Dawson Knox there. And all these receivers, and again, we'll talk about the receivers in a second, all the receivers there are probably going to be maximized as slot players. So it just is, it's an interesting group to try to fit together and sort of imagine how Kincaid has this 120 target upside. Or is he going to be a guy that settles in the Jake Ferguson, Cole Kmet zone of like 97, 89? I think he goes higher than that. But you know, when we look at the top tight ends last year, Evan Engram, ridiculous, 140 targets, Hockenson, 127, Njoku, 120, Travis Kelce, 120, Sam Laporta, 118. And then obviously your guy, Trey McBride, had 104, but mostly that was in the second half of the year. I think prorated, he would come out much higher than that.
Yeah. Kincaid is so much upside. And then so you can see the downside too, as you point out, when you look at a granular, and it's interesting because, as you said, Curtis Samuel, all these guys can play the slot, Shakir. So how he's deployed is something that we need to pay attention to in the preseason.
All right. So next tight end question here, we've got, does Jonnu Smith get serious usage in Miami? I'm glad that you threw this one on the outline, Dalton, because it's kind of a sicko question here. But what has you intrigued about Jonnu Smith potentially in Miami?
I mean, after the top really dozen tight ends, there's just a gigantic tier with a bunch of question marks. And, you know, you're in the Scott Fish Bowl now and you're looking at really deep tight ends when people that play tight end premium. And Jonnu Smith, really, the depth chart's wide open in Miami. I know they didn't use their tight end much last year, but the two fastest carrier speeds from a tight end position last year were both Jonnu Smith. So he fits with the speed in Miami. Play action boosts tight end production more than wide receivers. It's just really wild how much it helps that position. And Miami had the second most play action last year behind only Minnesota. McDaniels called him a yards after the catch machine or something like that. And Jonnu's pretty good there. So I could see him being a definite fantasy sleeper at a thin position after the top group.
Yeah, it is a thin position after the top group. And I do think, look, they're famous last words. There are a lot of interesting tight end options, but they're all dart throws, right, in the late rounds. I mean, a lot of people like Noah Fant. I think Noah Fant makes a lot of sense, but Jonnu is definitely a name to remember. You know, he was good last year with the Falcons, man. Obviously, it pissed off fantasy people because it wasn't Kyle Pitts, but they drew up some creative plays for him on this usage front. And Miami really has a need, I think, for a third pass catcher. Is that going to be Odell Beckham at this point in his career? I don't know about that. I really like Malik Washington, but he's a sixth round rookie. Jonnu Smith could be a sneaky answer there in Miami. It's kind of like him. I like Davis Allen as a super deep sleeper at tight end. Very, very, very late. The Rams tight end there. But there are some interesting players there in decent spots. Will Disley, I think, is mildly interesting as a Chargers tight end. So, yeah, Jonnu Smith, though, I think is the most intriguing of that bunch.
I've been going Colby Parkinson for the Rams. Am I making a mistake? Davis Allen should be the pick there. Because I don't think I'm not expecting much from Higbee.
Yeah, I'm not saying Davis Allen is for sure the guy. I just think they're going to play a lot more 12 personnel this year because they have two high-quality starting receivers. I think this would drop off after that. And I think that he could be an interesting part of that. And there's just a couple of plays from him while I was watching Cooper Kupp or Puka Nacua, especially in that Rams game. I'm like, man, I think Davis Allen can play a little bit, but like I said, that's like a 20-second Scott Fishbowl round pick, not a fantasy draft candidate, most likely. I still got the candle lit for Jelani Woods too, but that's a whole other
discussion. Oh, me too. Yeah. Richardson's going to turn him. Yeah. Going to make him fantasy viable for sure.
I would love that. Okay. So on late round tight ends, another guy who has been popular, especially for the best ball sickos, Ben Sinnott in Washington with the Commanders. You have this one down here. What is Ben Sinnott's role in Washington? And I think this is an important one, Dalton, because You know, I had this conversation with D-Bro, Derek Brown on the pod, and we were just talking about Luke McCaffrey. You know, he's big on Ben Sinnott. I'm a little concerned that they think he's like a Kyle Juszczyk type of player for them. And if he is, that's not going to lead. That's going to be a good player for Washington, but I don't know if it's going to be a good fantasy tight end in year one. And I do think everybody's kind of trying to chase the next Sam Laporta. As our buddy Andy Behrens pointed out on Twitter to Neil Dutton and a few folks, there is no next Sam Laporta. There is only one Sam Laporta.
Yeah, there's a lot to like under the hood here with Sinnott. But on the other hand, Jaden Daniels, how successful are they going to be as a passing attack? Zach Ertz is there. And recently the management came out and labeled him, you know, possibly a fullback role. So that's why I went here. I mean, if he's playing that, then we can cross him off our cheat sheets, at least for year one, and just concentrate in dynasty. But if that was just coach talk and we get to August and he's competing for starter reps at tight end, and there's just Jahan Dotson and Luke McCaffrey behind McLaurin, you know, maybe he does become intriguing. So this is absolutely a situation to pay attention to throughout August.
Yeah, we've just sort of moved the lines a little bit on when a tight end can be fantasy relevant after what we saw last year with Kincaid and Laporta. But the rule has been this is a slow developing position where we 100%. Don't see the best of guys early in their career, especially a guy that's like kind of a position nebulous player like a Ben Sinnott might be. I mean, the GM Adam Peters, who comes from San Francisco, I think he compared him to George Kittle, but he did also compare him to Kyle Juszczyk too, which, look, Juszczyk is an awesome player. He's one of the most unique matchup weapons and they have so many matchup weapons there in San Francisco, but he's a unique matchup weapon in his own right. But at the same time, he's never been a high touch, high quality fantasy player. What I do think we're getting an indication out of this, though, that like I think Sinnott's going to play a lot. I think Zach Ertz is going to play a lot. He's like the classic progress stopper tight end. I think they're going to be a pretty 12. They're another team that I think could play a lot of 12 personnel, could play a lot of two tight end sets or whatever you label Ben Sinnott as. So the Jahan Dotson, like Luke McCaffrey, if it is a battle for that second receiver spot, it's going to be a pretty important one to follow. I still have the candle lit for Dotson. I think he's a good player, but I don't think there's going to be a third receiver that's relevant in Washington beyond the fact of just like what's their pass rates and how good is Jaden Daniels. I think the fact that we're talking about Ertz and we're talking about Ben Sinnott as this fullback tight end type of player, I don't know there's going to be a lot of room for a third receiver on this roster.
Yeah, I'm worried enough for McLaurin as is. Just draft Daniels and Brian Robinson in this offense, which could be higher pace too this year. But Sinnott, interesting long-term.
Interesting long-term for sure. And yeah, if he's a guy, if we get the reports out of training camp, like, no, he's playing a tight end, he's pushing Zach Ertz, he is definitely a guy that could be a value even at like, you know, tight end 26 or something like that. And I could see him really rising up preseason draft boards. So definitely an important one to follow. Important health considerations for the following three tight ends, Dalton: TJ Hockenson, Tyler Higbee, Juwan Johnson. Man, you know, Hockenson, Edwin, our buddy Dr. Edwin Poros was on the show with me yesterday, or a couple days ago, and he was basically like, yeah, TJ Hockenson is not even going to be playing until like October. That makes me pretty nervous. I'm not sure what we need to hear with any of these three guys to get super jacked up about them before the season.
Yeah, Hockenson was just being drafted too high early in summer, coming up a torn ACL and MCL. Surgery date was January 29th. I saw other doctors suggest, you know, it should be 10 months with a multi-ligament surgery for tight end minimum. And that's like week 12. I mean, he won't be 100% all of 2024. There's a chance. So I have not been drafting him even in best ball. And I don't know. I'm probably not going to end up with any Hockenson at all. And then the Higbee situation, we need to see the Davis Allen Parkinson battle in LA. And then, of course, we don't really know at all the timeline for Juwan Johnson. It just sounded, didn't sound great. So these are the situations we need to hopefully become more clear on their health status come when this regular season starts.
Yeah, all three of these guys are interesting, but just because I think they impact the overall offense as well. Juwan Johnson, I think he was set up to have a really nice season in Clint Kubiak's offense, and I've said it on the show, wrote about it for the website. I have a bit of a weird fascination with this Saints offense. It does. The tight end position looks very different without Juwan Johnson there, so his health reports are pretty critical to follow. Higbee, yeah, I definitely think there's open opportunity for some of those guys you mentioned. And Hockenson, and we can use him as a transition to one of our first wide receiver questions. If Hockenson's not right, And their second receiver, you know, is a little bit of a question. Like I said, I'm going to transition that smoothly because I'm a professional podcast host. If that second receiver position is a little bit of a question, and Jordan Addison, your one of your questions here is, what is Jordan Addison's status? Because he was arrested for suspicion of a DUI in Los Angeles recently near the airport. Not, if you read the reports, not great. This is his second vehicular issue in his first 2 years of his career. Not good. So yeah, what is his status? We could be looking at Minnesota as like, yeah, this was a good spot for JJ McCarthy to land. And it is, I think, a good spot, right? Still got Kevin O'Connell, still have a quality offensive line. They have the best receiver on planet Earth. Guy wears number 18, Justin Jefferson. But still, like, we're taking away Hockenson for most of the year. We're taking away Addison maybe for some time, or at least we got to ask, like, is he locked in at this point? I don't know. I think there are more questions about the Vikings offense maybe than we would have thought at the end of April's draft.
Yeah, Addison would have benefited. If he's playing, he'll benefit from Hockenson's absence. That it's really thin afterward. Brandon Powell, Trent Sherfield. Addison, in my opinion, was getting drafted too high even before this latest incident. I mean, he was highly underwhelming with Jefferson when was on the field last year. Target per route run was just 15%. It was actually 19.5% with Jefferson off the field. He was a big play merchant, as mentioned in your Ryan Heath pod earlier this summer. I mean, you look at the yards per route run, nice. You look at the first downs per route run, not so good. So he scored four more touchdowns than expected based on usage, the downgrade at quarterback. Yeah, Addison, you needed to worry about separately, and now you do. He removed all Viking stuff from social media. The team is reportedly very upset with him and may even suspend him if the league doesn't. So, wow. Yeah, the Addison situation was already, in my opinion, was one to avoid, but maybe his ADP will overcorrect here. But he's definitely a situation to pay attention to. And conversely, Justin Jefferson, all the targets. I mean, no Hawk, and maybe Addison, you know, is not really much of a competition one way or the other. Yeah, Jefferson's just going to see a ton of targets playing indoors. And yeah, I mean, that's going to be a real battle between Lamb, Hill, Chase, Jefferson, and St. Brown. I mean, really all those guys are just in such good situations because you counter the loss of Cousins with maybe just so many targets for Jefferson.
Yeah, the highest target share for a player last year is 31%. For Tyreek Hill, 30.7% for Keenan Allen, Devontae Adams, 30.5%. And obviously, Justin Jefferson all the way down there at 25.9% in the games he was active last year. I think he could easily be a 30% target share player this year. And look, it's not going to be the same as being a 30% target share in Kirk Cousins' offense in 2022, like a veteran quarterback versus a rookie quarterback. Totally understand that. But he is definitely a threat to, I think, lead the NFL in target share this year. He was at even the year prior in 2022, when he had 179 targets, he had 26.6% of the team targets just because, again, Kirk is a guy that's going to spread it around. Jefferson, I think, could lead the NFL in target share this year. Yeah, man, Addison makes me nervous. I mean, it makes me nervous from a dynasty perspective, just from the decision making. And I agree with you. Like, he had a pretty overrated rookie season to me. 12th percentile success rate versus press coverage. In reception perception, mostly just successful on these like crossing routes, dig routes, post routes, stuff like that, which he could have still done in his second season, but you got to actually be out there on the field to be doing that. I think we have some outstanding questions there. So he was definitely on my do not draft list before this. And I don't know, he'd have to fall pretty far to get on my draft list. That's interesting that you've read that he could be suspended by the team. I wouldn't blame them at this point. Like I said, second vehicular issue in back-to-back years, that you got to ask questions about decision making at that point. Unfortunately, that transitions us pretty well to how long will Rashee Rice be suspended. Jordan Addison is not the only second year receiver with some legal issues. I think obviously we don't know the answer to this. We're not going to know the answer to this, but Rashee Rice, how long he's suspended for, is certainly going to be a big question we may or may not get answered in training camp.
Yeah, I have no insight and no guesses here. Definitely a wide range of possibilities with his suspension. Xavier Worthy, fastest player in the league, catching the ball from Mahomes. But, you know, they're easing him back from this hamstring. Mm-hmm. Hollywood Brown is still good when healthy, but can he hold up? I mean, obviously, there are just so many fantasy ramifications here. Kelsey, 34 years old. So, I mean, Worthy could, if Hollywood can't stay healthy again and Rice is suspended long, I mean, and Worthy gets healthy, I mean, his a lot of uncatchable targets in college, and it's kind of might be the rest of the league really upset with themselves. They let him fall to Kansas City, and he could be a monster right away. like we've seen some fantasy rookie receivers recently. Or Rice only gets a few games and he's back earlier and he just keeps eating underneath. So absolutely, with you know, Mahomes and a team that passes at such a high rate as Kansas City, that's a situation that we all need to be monitoring.
I think it's fascinating to consider these Chiefs receivers just because no doubt it's a better group this year when Rashee Rice is on the field. I think even with or without him, it's a better group than it was last year. And Rashee Rice is interesting just because he definitely looks really good from a yards per route run perspective, first downs per route run, very efficient player last year. He's just a hyper-specific player. His early season, early career data, Dalton, looks a lot like Juju Smith-Schuster. It looks a lot like Jarvis Landry. Like, how excited does that get you as an individual player?
Very manufactured, very manufactured, and it's because out of need. And Kelsey was hurt last year. You're right; they have more options now. And you watching him were never impressed. I was trying to, you know, pump him up this year, being top 10 before the additions and obviously the suspension. But I backed off. And you're right; I think a lot of the numbers, the yards per route run last year, might be a little bit overrated with him as a player.
Yeah, it's not that I would say I wasn't impressed. But I don't think that it's a little similar to like Christian Watson, honestly, when he came out of his rookie season in very, very different ways. Like, they're not similar players, but it's just that I think efficiency stats were a little boosted by kind of a hyper specific and some design touches. Rashee Rice in his reception perception sample, Dalton, ran a slant route on 38.3% of his charted routes, which is the highest for any receiver I've charted since 2014.
Wow.
Which is just pretty wild. I just have some questions about whether he's a guy that is going to be a full field. You throw this guy the ball 120 times every year in a good offense. And like Reed and Mahomes have even talked about, like, they weren't happy with their offensive performance. They don't care that they won the Super Bowl. Like, they want to be, they're not doing what they did on offense again this year. And I think that comes down to, like, we don't want to, it's good that Rashee Rice can do this stuff. I don't think they want to be throwing him the ball like 8 times per game on these crossing routes. Hopefully he can develop and do more than that. I wouldn't say that he's been focused on developing this offseason necessarily. There's been a lot else going on. And I just am interested to see, like, are Marquise Brown and Xavier Worthy, are they pure vertical options or are they going to be more manufactured stuff? Just a lot of outstanding questions with this whole receiver room. But yeah, a lot of it comes down to, what is Rashee Rice's status and will there be a suspension and when will we learn about that suspension? Because that will unlock the ADP of the other guys.
Yeah, no doubt. Draft Pacheco and, you know, avoid the wide receiver headache. But no, that's absolutely probably, you know, the number one maybe situation to monitor.
All right. Third individual player question before we move into some more crowded rooms to sort out after the break. It's our guy, Brandon Ayuk. Will Brandon Ayuk be traded, Dalton Del Don? My guess is no. As a 49ers fan, do you have a different point of view here?
They call Pacheco. I always do that. Brandon Ayuk, man, this is very scary, Harmon. We know how awesome he is, one of the best wide receivers in the league. I'm hoping this trade request is just a final negotiating tactic, kind of letting SF know he won't show up to training camp. The Niners have been dealing with this with Debo and Bosa over the last few seasons, and I think they can waive Ayuk's fines because it's on a rookie contract.
Yeah, they did that with Bosa.
The ramifications would be huge, obviously, for Ayuk. Where does he end up? Washington would be a major downgrade. If he goes to a place where he gets all the targets, then sure. But I mean, you just love to stay in this system and hope that the Niners pass more, as many suspect this year. And if he does leave, Debo's splits are just like hilarious without him on the field, like insanely high. Kittle's aren't dramatic. Kittle is way, way more dramatic with Debo off the field, for what it's worth. Our guy Pearsall now on the non-football injury list. Shanahan loves Ayuk. I mean, he knows how good he is. He's one of the best route runners in the league, awesome blocker, and is important. I mean, I know that Debo is the more unique player, but Ayuk's the guy running the harder routes, you know, on the outside and doing the things to open up all that stuff. So I hope he stays. I expect him to stay. And I think they're going to maybe get rid of Debo a year from now. It would be my prediction. And you're going to make it work this year somehow and reward him either before or promise him after this year and maybe have to move on from Debo because obviously going to pay Purdy too.
Yeah, they got to pay Purdy. I don't know if you saw this, but I've been saying that I'm a little more Purdy pill.
I have. I appreciated it. Yes, I went and told my wife, and I was like, "Yes, you looked at the yes, you looked at the film, and you finally you woke up. I like it. It's good.
I woke up. Yeah. I love the image of you being like, hey, I'm sure you don't speak to your wife in that way, but excuse me, dear, you'll never believe this. Harmon, he's finally on board with Purdy, and you know, the whole household can rest now.
I explained the situation, you know, because your site employs a quarterback guru who didn't love his charting the first year. So, and then I said, Harmon wasn't as down, but now he's come around.
Yeah, I think I've always been kind of like a Purdy centrist, but you mentioned a lot of the stuff there that with Ayuk running the harder routes on the team, Purdy is willing to rip those throws. And your boy Jimmy Garoppolo is in the NFL zeitgeist lately because of the Davante Adams clips from the Netflix show about, like, I've never been hit so much in my effing life. And, like, he clearly Jimmy maybe thinks he's a nice guy, but he did not like playing with Jimmy Garoppolo. And that's been the experience watching Jimmy Garoppolo with this 49ers offense and watching him with Brandon Ayuk. It's like, my God, this guy is open on all the high degree of difficulty throws. Now they've got a quarterback who takes those throws. I think that's why Shanahan loves Brock Purdy. And like you mentioned, why he loves Brandon Ayuk. So I struggle seeing Ayuk playing anywhere else. If I'm him, I'm taking it. Look, and far be it for me to ever say, like, number one thing, get your money, get paid, the whole deal. But at the same time, and his agent's saying the same thing too. All this is mostly agent stuff, by the way. Like, people get so pissed at players and like, oh my God, Ayuk, this is all an agent thing. I'm sure it'll probably get sorted out. It just is the way these guys do, the agents do this stuff now. Whenever if you're a fan of a team and you're pissed off about a player contract situation, direct all your energy towards the agents. They're taking 10% of these deals anyways. They can take your anger. All right. So direct it there. Love it. I saw some fan the other day being like, Ayuk's agent really needs to sit down with him and explain to him that he's not just like, oh yeah, I bet his agent's going to be the one to say take less on the deal. What a stupid thing to say. What a stupid thing to put publicly in the air. I'm saying all this to say, if I'm Ayuk though, I am like, do I really want to be leaving San Francisco going to play with Russell Wilson, Justin Fields, or I know he likes Jaden Daniels, but damn, like, look at how pissed Davante Adams is. Like, the grass is not always greener on the other side, man. But still, he should at least get Amon-Ra St. Brown's contract. That's what I would be pushing for if I was him. And if I'm the 49ers, I'm making that happen. And there's just no reason for them to take draft picks right now when they could trade him after the season and get those same draft picks in February when they'll be literally worth the same then.
Yep, all fair stuff. And let me preface it by saying Purdy had the most YPA ever last season, but I will say Garoppolo's performance makes it harder and harder for me to argue for Purdy, man. Since leaving Shanahan's system, Garoppolo, it's just like, oh,
Purdy's
my God.
So much better.
I know, no question, but I mean, it's crazy that Garoppolo was putting up those seasons in SF, and then you watch him play afterward. It's like, oh my, it's brutal. But yes, Purdy, million times better. I mean, way more elusive. And as you said, well, actually, dares to throw those balls downfield. I'm glad you came around, Harmon. And I'm glad you agree. I mean, I'm glad you were impressed with what you saw.
Yeah, it just, for me, I think these two are such, like, I don't think you can commit to Purdy long-term and not have Brandon Ayuk there. I think that would be, you'd get diminishing returns from Purdy in that situation, because it's the best part of what he does is rip those throws to Ayuk, which is why I expect Ayuk to be there. From a fantasy perspective, I don't know, man, just real quick on the Ayuk stuff, because it is in the news and, a lot of people play Dynasty and everything. If you have Ayuk in Dynasty, would you rather him stay in San Francisco where it's a more efficient environment, where, yeah, he had 105 targets last year. I'll take the over on 105 targets this year in San Francisco, even if everybody stays healthy. Or would you rather him go to some mystery destination that, okay, I can guarantee you wherever he goes next, he's at least getting 130 targets. But what's the cutoff there? Like, where are you more drawn to if you have like an Ayuk and Dynasty?
1,000% you want him to stay. I mean, he's in the best offensive environment by a mile. This coach has the best YPA every year. George Kittle's 30 years old. Debo's always injured. And I mean, just the physical style he plays, I think there's a chance he's gone next year. McCaffrey's coming off 400 touches and he's, approaching 30 years old. Purdy is someone that Shanahan believes in. I mean, it's forget me or you. He trusts him way more than Garoppolo. And there are a lot of personnel decisions he's quietly made in the offseason that suggest he's going to throw more moving forward. I mean, he did throw a ton in Atlanta when Ryan won MVP. So yep. I think the Niners are going to throw more. The efficiency simply has to regress because no one's that good. I mean, it was unbelievable, you know, historic levels. But no, I want Ayuk. I know it's going to be hard for him to produce that amount of yardage if his targets stay the same this year, but the touchdowns could increase. He's the guy they look to historically in the end zone, just not recently, but before, even when he was in the doghouse, he would get more targets down there than Debo. So Ayuk in that situation and the Niners with Purdy, you know, for the next decade, I think that's and Shanahan tied to Shanahan. That's what you want. And real quickly, you know, very 2-3 years, it could be an older Kittle, no Debo and no McCaffrey. Yeah. And then you're looking at the targets and the system.
Totally. Like, I think, okay, if the Bills were calling or the Chargers were calling, then sure, maybe we could talk about 130 targets from Justin Herbert or Josh Allen to Brandon Ayuk. Sure. But I don't know if those are realistic. And yeah, I would much rather, I'm with you generally, like overall, given the choice, I'd rather him stay in San Francisco because what has been is not what will be, right? I mean, I think he is going to continue to get more and more looks there. And just that offensive environment is, I'd rather bet on that ecosystem. And them getting to from 32nd to 25th in pass attempts would be a huge, huge development for Ayuk's upside. And I think it's possible.
I'll throw a hypothetical real quick and then move on. The Niners, they were trying to replace their defensive line. So they went Kinlaw and then Ayuk instead of drafting CeeDee Lamb with Kinlaw. And I was fired up at the time, but Ayuk's proven to be a damn good player. But I just say if you switch them right now and Ayuk was Lamb and you move Lamb to the Niners, I think you'd flip their fantasy rankings.
Yeah,
I think Ayuk would maybe be the number one receiver indoors in that offense by himself. Not kidding. Number one receiver. Or what, maybe you think that's crazy. I don't. I think he's good of a player as Lamb, right? So, and then Lamb would be more like the 10 to 12 range or whatever you have Ayuk. One final thought here. I have taken Drake London and two drafts over Ayuk and don't feel good about it. And I'm going to move Ayuk over London on my ranks, assuming he stays in the Niners. Who do you like more, London or Ayuk? I mean, that's a tough one for me.
I just updated my rankings today. And look, I haven't done my projections yet. That's still to come. I think I have these guys. Yeah, I have Ayuk at 10 and I have London at 13.
Okay.
And
all right.
Okay, I'm very close. Very close. Okay. But yeah, I think I'd rather have Ayuk just a smidge over Drake London.
Same here now moving forward. All right.
All right, final individual player question before we talk about some crowded wide receiver rooms. How healthy is Mike Williams? I'm glad you put this one on here just because, look, Mike Williams himself is not a fantasy asset. Maybe you disagree with me. That's the way I view it. But if he's healthy, this offense looks much better. Like with Mike Williams as the X receiver, you can move Garrett Wilson around, do a lot of stuff. That has a big impact on the ecosystem overall, maybe more so than just like Mike Williams as an individual fantasy player.
Yeah, I think he could be, if he does return to health, a pretty good player win on the field. And Aaron Rodgers, don't tell Andy Behrens this in my debate between Breece Hall and Bijan Robinson, because I'm on the Hall side, but Rodgers typically leads the league in passing touchdowns in the red zone. They throw the ball a lot down there. So I could see Big Mike Williams getting some love there. But yeah, this affects Garrett Wilson. Do they trade for Devontae Adams? Like there are rumors that it's sure to happen midseason. So Mike Williams is a good player when healthy. And as you said, this could affect, just if for no other reason, Breece Hall and the rest of the offense and Garrett Wilson, just to move the chains. You know, last year,
yeah,
it was like the fewest air yards by quarterbacks in touchdowns, like in years the Jets produced. It was just nothing downfield. So yeah, I mean, I don't know about, I don't think you're too high on Corley right away. I'm not either. So Mike Williams is a big difference between the Xavier Gibsons as the number two receiver there in New York. So they need him healthy.
Garrett Wilson ran a lot of nine routes, corner routes, and out routes last year. I would love to see those become the Mike Williams routes. And then we get more routes over the middle of the field, more layup routes for Garrett Wilson, which I think will be the plan if Aaron Rodgers is healthy for all 17 games. Okay, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll look through some crowded wide receiver rooms and see what clues we need to try to answer some of these questions. All right, we're back. First one up here, sorting through some crowded wide receiver rooms. Who is Houston's wide receiver 3? Love this one, Dalton. I think, can we agree that it's not Nico Collins? Do you, just off the top, do you agree that the wide receiver 3 here is not Nico Collins?
We can't agree there. I love Dell, okay. But Collins is the guy here for sure.
Yeah, I think he's the one because he's the X. He's not going to leave the field. And again, similar to what I said with Ayuk, what has been will not always be. I don't think the like games where he was a 67% snap share player are instructive at all. Like at the early part of the year when they're rotating the receivers, trying to figure it out, throw that stuff in the trash. He's an established guy now. So between Diggs and Dell, I assume you're more so on the Tank Dell side than Stephon Diggs side. And I'm very back and forth on the two. What like signs would you need to see to say like, oh, this guy's the three and this guy's the two?
Well, maybe if it's no other reason, it's how they're deployed. Last year, Jacob Gibbs points out the Texans ranked 26th in slot target rate, didn't use three wide receiver sets all that often. Obviously, that's going to increase this year, but Diggs showed some signs of decline last season, entering a new offense in year 10. Shakir had more receiving yards than Diggs over Buffalo's final 10 games last year. Meanwhile, Dell is just an absolute monster. I mean, he averaged 10.8 targets, 6.3 catches, 93 receiving yards, and scored five touchdowns over his final four games as a rookie. I know there are some injuries we have to be sure he's recovered from. There was not that tightrope ankle surgery that Tony Pollard had. So I think he's going to be fine there. I know he's a smaller guy, so there's risk there. But give me the ascending player who just put up really impressive rookie stats versus the guy on the wrong side of 30 joining a new offense, you know, and he's a, you know, aging veteran, slower guy. But that's, you know, obvious coming from me, a guy who's always drafting the younger players.
Hey, but you're a good ranker, pal. I saw you had an incredible accuracy ranking there the other day from Fantasy Pro. So shout out to you. For all the
Thank
people
you.
That gave you
that.
For your... spicy takes. You're one of the people that don't rank like you're trying to win the accuracy contest. You rank like you believe, and hey, good results for Dalton there. That's why he's the rankings guy and I'm the routes guy. Okay, so on
hey,
those
you finished
routes,
first
though,
in that contest a couple years ago, and thank you for pointing that out. I finished fifth overall, but I'm a you'll even see my ranks from last year, boom or bust. Number one in running backs and then like not good in quarterbacks, which I usually am good, like toward the bottom. So I'm very, very, it can be, you're right. I'm definitely not with the consensus there. But yeah, last year, apparently I did well on running backs despite my Tony Pollard rank.
That's right. Didn't you have Pollard like number two?
Yeah.
Running back?
Yeah, and still finished first over 236 rankers. I don't know. Go figure. I must have done something else right. But yeah, but Pollard did not help.
Well, whatever. You didn't need the help, buddy. You're the man. So on the routes, though, on these receivers. Interesting that I agree with you. The key here is who's going to play inside, because they're going to play more 11 personnel. Again, you don't trade for Stephon Diggs and then like we play 12 personnel because that's what we do. No, they're going to play a lot of three receiver sets. CJ Stroud can do that stuff. They're going to evolve the offense with CJ Stroud. But who's going to be the slot receiver between this team? And like people know my Stephon Diggs take at this point. If you're new to the podcast, like I've talked a lot about it. Like he was a bit of a declining player last year. There's certainly some step back there, especially from a vertical standpoint. So does his routes make more sense in the slot now? Good question, because we haven't seen him be a true full-time slot receiver since 2016 with the Vikings. So at least we know that's in his bag. Like he can play inside and he can run these short routes, which I think is where he's good at. But Tank Dell, he's a smaller guy. Does he make more sense as a speed slot receiver? Well, he was not a slot receiver at all last year. He only ran... he did not run many routes from the slot at all. He's primarily an outside guy, you know, deep man coverage beater. I don't know. I really struggle with these two guys and who I want more for fantasy. But yeah, figuring out which one of them is the third and which one's the two is going to be a big deal.
One thing we can be certain of is the Texans are not going to finish 19th in pass rate over expectation like they did last year. They're going to definitely be passing the ball more. And this is absolutely, maybe I'm wrong and maybe Diggs does emerge. I mean, he gets drafted above Dell in most leagues, fantasy leagues. So maybe Diggs, he's listed as the number one receiver on some depth charts. So maybe he is, you know, he's the man. So absolutely a situation to monitor throughout the preseason.
Let's go to Stephon Diggs' old team. What is the Bills' new pecking order at wide receiver? Again, I just wrote a whole piece on this for the website. Talked through all of the pass catchers, Dalton Kincaid, James Cook. I'm like, we gotta consider, we're not gonna talk about James Cook because he's a running back, but he's part of the passing game equation here, Dalton. 2.4 average depth of target for James Cook last year. That led all players at the position with at least 50 targets. Cook and Saquon Barkley are the only running backs north of 2.0 average depth of target the last 2 years. They used him as a real receiving weapon. So even he's going to be a part of this mix. It's a crowded room. What indications do you need to see from guys like Khalil Shakir, Curtis Samuel, Keon Coleman? And I will say, I labeled them in the piece, the cast-off crew. And I'll explain this maybe more in a second, but I think one of Marquez Valdes-Scantling, Chase Claypool, and Mac Hollins is going to matter a little bit to this team this year. But what indications are you looking for these receivers in Buffalo this year?
Yeah, definitely some Claypool hype. I do have a take on this, definitely open to being wrong, but entering training camp, my take is Keon Coleman is an awesome interview, great kid, love him. But his yards per target was the second lowest among this year's wide receiver prospects. My guy on the Niners, Jacob Cowing, was the only one lower, I believe, and his ADOT was significantly lower. Coleman was never a target hog throughout college. He ranked 115th out of 175 wide receivers last year in yards per route run versus man. Reception has him in 20th and 19th percentile against man and press, as you may know. He caught just 10 of 30 contested targets last year. So I'm kind of worried about him as a prospect. Maybe you can tell me otherwise. Khalil Shakir has had his moments, but he managed a 14% target rate last season, even when given a bigger opportunity. So I'm into Curtis Samuel. He averaged 8 touches per game and a career-high 19.7 target share with Joe Brady in Carolina. You mentioned he's a dimension the offense needs. Samuel outplayed Jahan Dotson last year in an abysmal situation in Washington. I mean, that's not really underrate how bad it was there with Hal in that unfunctional offense. So many targets vacated here in Buffalo. Curtis Samuel, you look at his career quarterbacks, it's awful. Like Sam Howell, Wentz, Heinicke, Bridgewater, Allen, Cam Newton. I mean, it's bad. So Samuel will not play, you know, all games. He'll miss some and he'll be injured. But man, he's my top Buffalo wide receiver target without question.
Same. I'm with you. He's the top guy for me in Buffalo. Hayden Winks from Underdog Fantasy pointed this out today. Curtis Samuel's quarterbacks and where they've been in EPA per dropback since 2017. Sam Howell, 81st. Carson Wentz, 35th. Taylor Heinicke, 59th. Teddy Bridgewater, 29th. Kyle Allen, 65th. What was left of Cam Newton at that point, 47th. I added that editorial note to Hayden's tweet on Cam Newton there just because he's the clear outlier of like, oh, he's a good quarterback. But yeah, so I think Samuel, this is the best quarterback he's ever going to play with his career. He's not really a candidate to play X receiver. That I think is interesting. Is that going to be Keon Coleman? Obviously, I have questions about Coleman's ability to separate there. I think he will be more maximized if he's used inside. But Shakir's a slot. I wouldn't say he's a slot only, but slot mostly player. The fact that Curtis Samuel has always been a quality separator against man coverage in reception perception makes me think he is the guy to get here. 75.4% success rate versus man last year. That's an 82nd percentile mark. I think he's going to be the guy that plays the most, but maybe we're wrong. Maybe we get through training camp and he's not an every down player. I would be a little surprised by that, but that's why this is a situation worth monitoring. I just want to make the note that, like I said, this cast off crew, if Keon Coleman's not going to be the X receiver on this team, which I know they talked about him. Brandon Bean said he's going to learn the X receiver position. I think he will be more maximized. He didn't play X last year at FSU. That was Johnny Wilson, who went in the sixth round of the Eagles and is like a tight end convert. So he wasn't even FSU's X receiver last year. He's primarily off the line of scrimmage as a flanker and running like over the middle routes, which is where I think he's best used if he's going to be used outside and not as a big slot receiver. So if he's not going to play X and Samuel's a flanker slot and Khalil Shakir is a flanker slot, I could see one of these guys like MVS or, you know, Chase Claypool or Mac Hollins being like the sacrificial X receiver, which is an idea that I'm obsessed with right now. Just like run clear out routes, clear out space so we can do pre-snap motion, which Joe Brady did a lot of motion more so than they were doing with the previous offensive coordinator there. I don't know. I just could see one of these guys, which nobody in fantasy wants that. Don't pick up these guys in fantasy, but I think it's interesting to consider if one of these guys plays a lot more, that could limit a Coleman or a Samuel or a Khalil Shakir getting on the field, but it might also help open things up for the offense.
Yeah, Buffalo, just a crucial situation to pay attention to. Awesome offense, quarterback, scores a bunch of points, and lost Diggs and Gabe Davis. So yeah, Kincaid, maybe Curtis Samuel, these guys will take advantage of it.
All right, another crowded wide receiver room we've got to try to get right here. Let's talk about the Green Bay Packers crowded wide receiver room here real quick, Dalton. I mean, it's a popular topic. Everybody wants to talk about the Packers crowded wide receiver room. Do you have a lean between the top four guys. And we know there's other guys on the depth chart, Bo Melton, Malik Heath. They have two quality tight ends there, two young guys, Luke Musgrave, Tucker Kraft, but just these top four receivers, Jaden Reed, Christian Watson, Romeo Doubs, Dontavian Wicks. Do you have a strong take? And what are you looking for? What are you looking to find out here between this receiver? Like, which of these receivers we should like? I will say, Dalton, just before I throw it to you, I think we are going to get like one hype piece every couple weeks on each of these guys. There was some video recently that Jordan Love did. One of my Discord members sent this to me, where he put Romeo Doubs as his X receiver on his like dream offense. Had him running a go route because Romeo Doubs is that sacrificial X receiver. There's that. And then like 2 days later, Dontavian Wicks is getting the buzz from Jordan Love saying like, oh yeah, he's going to have a monster year. I bet he's got another quote coming on Jaden Reed. I bet he's got one on Christian Watson. Like, what Jordan Love says is important, but that's going to happen for all these guys. So besides that being something we're going to hear out of camp, what are you looking to hear to actually get some real clues on how this receiver room plays out?
I see you're putting off our Ladd McConkey war until later. I like that.
Yes, so correct.
The Green Bay,
I'm the host of the show. I can editorialize outline in real time.
You're saving it for later. I appreciate that. I don't have a strong take on Green Bay. I'm probably going to avoid them all here. I think they're going to probably just spread it out here. As you pointed out, Christian Watson, he may have led all the receivers when on the field, but that's when the offense was its least functional. So I think it's going to be spike weeks for different players. You pointed out the Doubs thing that Love said. I was going to say the same. Doubs also was the clear number one throughout the playoffs. I don't think Watson was totally healthy then, but Jordan Love, people don't like to hear it, but he may be due for some touchdown regression this season. The Packers scored more than 76% of their touchdowns through the air last year, and then added Josh Jacobs. Green Bay scored a historical 95% of their goal-to-go possessions as touchdowns, the highest rate since the 90s. All these guys are good. I mean, Wicks is really interesting. His some under-the-hood stats are really like he could be a future star possibly. So I think with Reed, Doubs, Watson, tight ends, and Wicks, and now a new back who's going to be more involved at the goal line, it's kind of just a situation to avoid in fantasy.
So I don't necessarily think it's a situation to avoid, but I think it's like these are all maybe yellow light players, to use the Scott Pienowski term. They're guys like I'm not proactively saying like I'm going in taking a Green Bay receiver, because this could be a situation where they have a bunch of guys who are just good number two, number three receivers, but no true number one. And it could be kind of a rotation every single week. There could be weeks where Christian Watson plays 80% of the snaps. There could be weeks where he plays like 30% of the snaps. I think that's totally possible. Generally, when I view a receiver room like that, and we don't often get a receiver room where there are four guys we're interested in, but that means I'm typically not taking the first guy, which is Jaden Reed, which is unfortunate because I love Jaden Reed. I think he's a really good player, but I just haven't found myself clicking his name a lot. But I do end up then in this situation, maybe wanting to take the last guy there if I don't think there's that big of a gap, which is Dontavian Wicks. And I think there's a chance that Wicks could be the best receiver on this roster. I think there's a chance. I don't think it's a lock, but I think there's a chance. And where he goes in early best ball ADP, I'm just going to read you off the names of receivers that go 140th overall to 160th overall. Gabe Davis, Dontavian Wicks, Adonai Mitchell, Xavier Leggett, Quentin Johnston, Darnell Mooney, Adam Thielen. I feel like Wicks stands out like a sore thumb there as a guy that could really take that, like could be a real breakout candidate that's not a rookie. So I think he just is very interesting there to me. I will take the chance on him, but the other guys I haven't really drafted as much.
I like that take. And meanwhile, Jaden Reed is going as a top 35 receiver. I mean, he's, you know, that's not you're absolutely giving something else there, taking a player there. So, and Wicks could end up being the better player this year. So I don't mind that strategy. Take the last one who falls, but I'm not reaching for Reed here. That's too high of a price for the amount of targets there.
I think it's okay. I think he's okay there, just because I'm looking at the names after him. You know, Hollywood Brown, Calvin Ridley, Rashee Rice, DeAndre Hopkins, Deontay Johnson. I like Deontay Johnson, but like Christian Watson, Jordan Addison. I don't know that I like love any of those guys over Jaden Reed. So I think it's aggressive, but I think it's kind of an okay price that I don't end up really taking a lot, to be fair.
Yeah, I'm taking a Deontay Johnson or DeAndre Hopkins over him easily, just okay, the targets, fair. Their projection there. But I like Reed the player for sure, but it's just going to be tough for him with so many mouths to feed.
Yeah, I never want to come out too hard against a guy like Jaden Reed, who I really like as a player, but I'm with you that he doesn't have like a ADP that I'm definitely trying to smash there at that point. Okay, let's talk who emerges in New England. I feel like I've talked about this receiver room a lot, Dalton, lately, especially on the podcast with D-Bro. So I'm curious what your perspective is on this receiver room, what you're looking for.
No, I don't have a take. I liked your guys' talk back and forth, Polk and Baker. I kind of wanted some clarity from you here. Douglas, can he become a guy? He has some really interesting, interesting stats, but he's small. I'm a believer in Drake May, and Brissett's very solid. So I think that someone could easily emerge here. Hunter Henry even could be a sleeper at tight end. But no, I don't have a take here between Pop Douglas, Polk, Baker. I'm just really going to be paying attention in August is what I'm, this is definitely one to pay attention to.
Same. I agree with you. What I'm just hoping that we don't see any like, okay, J. Osborne's going to get a lot of snaps or Juju Smith-Schuster is going to get a lot of snaps. We just talked about Green Bay. If I'm the Patriots, I'm doing what they did last year. And it's just no progress stopping vets. Maybe Kendrick Bourne if he's healthy, but no progress stopping vets. I want Baker to get some snaps. I want Polk to get some snaps. Douglas to get some snaps. Demario Douglas is a bit of a weird player because he's like a man coverage beating slot receiver. So I don't know if that's going to lead him to be a high volume player, but I think he could be like a quality slot receiver, but maybe not somebody that demands a lot of targets in fantasy.
But you were Polk, right? Over Baker?
I like Polk. Yeah. I like them both a lot as prospects. I just think that the guy who like translates I go back and forth, honestly. I could talk out of both sides of my mouth because Baker stands out because he's an X receiver, which they don't have on the roster. And Polk, though, just rock solid player, runs routes that really overlap with Drake May, over the middle routes, make sense in this offense, rock solid hands. I just think he projects well to an early role, and obviously he was drafted first.
Fair.
Okay, let's talk the Cleveland one, and then we'll finish up with the Ladd-McConkey wars. I love this one that you put on here. Do we get clarity in Cleveland, and does it even matter? Because I'm so with you on this, Dalton. This receiver room is sneaky deep. The pass catching room is sneaky deep. But do we care? Does it even matter because of the Watson stuff and Watson's injury situation, which Dr. Edwin Porras pointed at, but we didn't go in a full deep discussion on it. I don't know, man. It's tough. But yeah, the receiver room is sneaky deep in Cleveland, so I do think we need to get some clarity in the offseason.
Producer Colin deserves credit for that one because that was not me, and I've been guilty of drafting Judy and Elijah Moore too high in the past, so I probably won't do that again. And Amari Cooper is this boring veteran that just I always have ranked too low, and Amari look into him, and when he dealt with even Watson last year, as long as it was Watson or Flacco, just got it done, and I think you even remarked that it's probably his best season as a pro or one of them. So I mean, if those other two guys just do their, you know, just whatever, continue to disappoint, and Nick Chubb doesn't return until late in the season, Amari Cooper, even if Deshaun Watson doesn't improve, I think Cooper is locked in another like top 20 wide receiver year.
Well, my apologies to Cooper, or excuse me, my apologies to producer Colin for not pointing out that this was his question. I will never do that again. I apologize to you, Colin, my good dear friend, producer Colin. My apologies. But he's right about Amari Cooper, though. Amari Cooper's been awesome in Cleveland. I think he's been the best 2 years of his career. He's worn a Cleveland Browns uniform. There's some pop about like Cedric Tillman potentially starting in two receiver sets. I think Tillman was an interesting prospect coming out of Tennessee, but he was like a pure X receiver prospect. And I think Amari Cooper's been awesome in that X receiver position. So it kind of doesn't square to me that like Tillman's going to get a lot of playing time, but we'll see. And then, yeah, I think Jerry Jeudy, like, people know my Jerry Jeudy take. I don't know that I love him as a vertical slot receiver because he's not a good zone coverage receiver. He's a man coverage receiver. And I still think Elijah Moore is underutilized as a vertical receiver as well. So, it's a crowded room. David Njoku there, 120 targets, like I mentioned earlier in the pod. So, like, do any of these guys really have room to eat? And how good is the dish going to be with the quarterback and obviously that quarterback coming off an injury?
Elijah Moore versus Jeudy, I just realized it's kind of one of your guys versus your opposite of your guys there. So hopefully Moore has not lived up to expectations you and I both had, right? I mean, that's for sure. Man, he was a training camp hero for like multiple years, but I feel like they're just going to rotate and Amari's just going to be the clear number one.
Yeah, that's kind of how I feel about it too. Man, I still have some hope that we'll see a decent stretch from Elijah Moore. I mean, he was kind of balling out with Flacco a little bit last year, and then he took that really scary hit against his former team in the Jets on like a Thursday night, I want to say. So yeah, we'll see. I hope we get a good stretch from him at some point in his career. Okay, final one here. What is the Chargers' new pecking order there in the wide receiver room? Dalton Del Don. Curious to hear what you're looking for here, as I know you are a Ladd McConkey hater. I guess you're just looking to mainline all the negative Ladd McConkey news that you possibly can. I will say, since we have talked, Dalton, about this situation earlier in the offseason, I'm even more radicalized that I think this offense is going to be better, way better than people think. And it's going to be good for Justin Herbert. I don't know about fantasy numbers, but he's going to have the most efficient season of his career in this offense, even with these pass catchers. But what are you looking for in terms of deciphering the pecking order in LA?
Yeah, I won't question that. Harbaugh's the man. He wins football games for sure, and the efficiency will increase. Herbert hasn't been a great YPA guy his whole career.
Right.
But the wide receivers here, even in a low-volume offense, it's going to be absolutely fantasy-worthy, especially if someone emerges. Joshua Palmer, average receiver at best. Quentin Johnston, maybe the worst receiver. So I get why people are excited about McConkey, who has a really aggressive ADP. These college stats, courtesy Jacob Gibbs again. McConkey's career high single game target at Georgia was 9. So he never commanded a double digit target game. He only topped 6 targets in 4 of 39 games, 24% target rate. Yes, Brock Bowers was there, but McConkey's yards per team pass attempt, very low. Jim Harbaugh only used 3 receiver sets 35% of the time last year. Only one team was lower. Yes, college. But Harbaugh only passed the ball 30% of the time in the red zone. I mean, it's just going to be low volume. McConkey could be that third receiver. I know you said, don't just say he's the slot guy. He's capable of more. But there is some concern there. They don't give up on Johnston, and he is just seeing the field. What if he sees the field 30% of the time week one? People are dropping him in fantasy. I mean, that is a range of outcomes here. McConkey plays 30% of the snaps week one, and everyone, you know, is dropping. Not to say he can't then suddenly become the guy the rest of the year, but I don't know. He was not a target earner throughout college, and now he's in a completely low volume offense. So I just don't see him being what people are drafting him so aggressively.
Fair point. Look, all fair points. I would be stunned. I think Quentin Johnson's got to come in there and like stun them in training camp to be a 2 receiver set player.
Okay.
And
like,
are they playing DJ Chark there in 2 receiver sets over Ladd McConkey, the only guy who can really separate here? I would just be a little surprised if he's not on the field almost all the snaps. But his ADP, I will agree with you that his ADP is aggressive. In early best ball drafts, wide receiver 43. He 84th player overall. He goes ahead of Roma Dunze. He goes ahead of Jackson Smith-Njigba, Brian Thomas, the aforementioned Keon Coleman. I mean, Cortland Sutton. And then it gets kind of dicey a little bit after that with Dick Jameson Williams, my guy.
And what
Curtis
does Palmer
Samuel,
go but, like 20 receivers later?
Yeah, that's the interesting one. And I'm still on a little bit of a journey with Josh Palmer, who's the 122nd overall player, wide receiver 55. He's risen a little bit, but I need to go back and chart Josh Palmer from last year to see just like how good he is. Like, can he be an average starting receiver, or is he a little bit below average? I think that's still an outstanding question for me.
Yeah, I believe he was another big play merchant as well last year. I know he's not any star 100%. at all by any means. You like McConkey as the prospect.
I do.
Forget his yards, per team pass attempt. I mean, you like him as a route runner, and you think he can excel at the NFL level. So I won't totally disregard that. And I've moved him up my ranks where I had him completely buried. I'm trying to get closer to the market, but I don't think McConkey is going to be on any of my teams really where he's going.
Yeah, I'm interested to see where that ADP settles and stuff like that, because he definitely looks like he could moonwalk into a great rookie season, but he does have to bypass all these guys there. And I just think my opinion is that he will. So that's just where it's at. And I mean, even the tight end room, it's Hayden Hurst, Donald Parham, Will Disley. It's a very mid tight end room. I think one of those guys could be a bit of a sneaky producer. At the same time, I also just think that this is going to be a totally blank slate offense. Like, okay, Josh Palmer's had some moments before. We don't care. Quentin Johnson was a first round pick. We don't care. It's totally new staff, totally new program there. This is why it's an important one in training camp to watch, Dalton.
Right.
Even like, okay, we drafted Ladd McConkey in the second round. honestly, we don't even care about that. Like, this is a very open room competition. Whoever's the best player in camp, I think will end up playing in two receiver sets. And I mean, I don't think it will be like DJ Chark and Quentin Johnson, but I guess that's within the realm of possibility just based on where this receiver room is.
And I'm totally open to being wrong. It's not like I've grinded a ton of film on him. Maybe he goes out there and impresses, and I'll change when more information becomes available. I also want to point out Matt Waldman, I think, has him as like a top 10 receiver this year. Like, not
wow.
Dynasty. I think he loves him, and as a redraft, has him super, super aggressively high. So I easily could be wrong on this one, and we'll know more, you know, in the next 6 weeks to see how he's deployed in L.A.
All right, buddy. I think that's going to do it. That was a banger of an episode. We have a ton to watch out for now as training camps are open with all these pass catching situations, Dalton. So appreciate you doing this. Appreciate all of your questions. And of course, producer Collins, Cleveland Browns question. So Dalton, what do you got working on that people could check out? What are you writing right now?
I have my favorite ADP picks just went up today. So look at that, comparing where guys are going in the market versus where I would take them. Some really dramatic differences there. Jonathan Brooks, Cooper Kupp, Malik Nabers, to name a few, Jaden Daniels. And then, looking forward to just potting with you in the future. I'm going to be on vacation next week, and then it's the grind, man. August is here. Football season's here. So, yeah, won't be leaving the house for the next 5 months.
Hell yeah, dude. Football's in the air. I can feel it, and I'm getting very, very, very excited about it. And training camp ratcheting up is only making me that much more amped. Like I said, that's going to do it for this show today. Scott Pienowski joins the pod on Tuesday next week to identify the biggest training camp questions we have at the quarterback and running back position. Until then, we're out.